Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we speak with Francesca Zani, food editor at Delish, where she develops recipes, writes for digital and print, and helps lead strategy for short-form video, including producing, directing, and hosting social media recipe reels. Not just that, she is the owner and curator of The Garnished Palette. We talk about her journey from Hudson Valley student to Culinary Institute graduate to becoming the recipe developer, video stylist, and host producer and writer that she is today. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Locks at Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Kip Capital Region, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. So we already had one Zani on a few episodes ago, and now we have another Zani with us. And honestly, really excited to catch up with her today. She's a recipe developer, video stylist, host, producer, and writer. She's a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America, mm-hmm. which is right down the road. Writer and coordinator for The Garnished Palette, your source for whimsical flavors, cheeky adventures, chic finds, and stylish travel. And not to mention, food editor for Delish. So with us today, we have Francesca Zani. Francesca, how are you?
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely. And it's just so nice.
Support the local.
Absolutely.
And local first.
Local first.
Think local first.
Yep.
Think local first.
You got it. Absolutely. and it's just great to catch up. Obviously, it was really nice catching up with Giancarlo. Now to have you in here. And it's really awesome to see your food journey with everything. Especially, I remember the days when you were just working at Giacomo's Pizza.
You remember that?
Of course
How
I do.
How do you remember that?
Because I went to Giacomo's all the time.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, Italian-American gal working at a pizzeria.
It works.
No. It's
a stereotype for a reason. It works.
It's a stereotype for a reason. It's funny. I always forget that I worked at Giacomo's. It was a short period of time that I was there in, I think it was my junior, senior year of high school, and I worked the counter, mm-hmm. and we always got to take pizza home at the end of the night.
There you go.
It was great.
See, that's the most perfect part of the job.
Yeah.
Like, I've worked at a couple of restaurants, and any little bit of food I can snag afterwards, that was the way to go.
That's the perk of the job.
Yeah, no, I wish that I worked in a pizzeria. I worked at a Ruby Tuesdays and another place. It's called The Standard. It's up in Albany. It's owned by the same people as EverReady and Double O
nice.
And all that.
Okay, those are good.
Oh, yeah,
diners.
Good stuff, but it was a little harder to take stuff home at the end of the night.
Probably.
But I feel that. But yes, no, I remember Giacomo's, of course.
Funny.
Especially because I ate too much pasta there when I growing up. So
probably after sporting events, I
yeah.
imagine your
No, that was the big thing.
Maybe that's coming back to me very slowly. Like, you guys would go out. Would you guys go out?
Oh, yeah. We would go out after soccer. I think soccer practices a lot. So, yeah. You know, we had a lot of that.
Actually.
Yeah.
I was scratching an old itch.
I'm bringing it back to you. Hopefully, no Vietnam memories or anything. No flashbacks. Very good. But besides, you know, working at a pizza place, you've done very, very well with yourself. Currently, food editor at Delish, and then you have your own platform with the Garnish Palette. So much to talk about here, but let's kind of bring it back to the beginning here. Like, what's your origins with falling in love with food?
My origin story.
Yes.
Origin story. It's not any different than many other people, but I always knew. I think you always have, like, that itch. When you know something feels like you're meant to do a thing,
yeah,
it kind of follows you through your life. And when I was really little, the food, my mom, my grandmother's, we're Italian. I'm Italian on both sides of the family. Nothing more, nothing less.
Yep.
So that, of course, helped build my platform, build me, who I am, and what I wanted to do. But the Food Network, actually, Food Media.
There you go.
The Food Network kind of was a spark for me, too. I always watched Rachel Ray on TV. I dressed up as her in the sixth grade for Halloween.
I love that.
Which was kind of fun. I wore this little felt thing that said RR, and people, I remember somebody asking me if I was supposed to be a server at Red Robin. My mom made it for me.
I'll admit, Red Robin was the first thing I thought of when you said RR.
I know. My mom tried. She tried. She's the best. But with Food Network, I do have vivid memories, actually, of after watching a show, maybe Rachel Ray or Giada, whoever was on at the time, the early days of Food Network, I would go into the kitchen and I'd probably grab a stool or a chair and get into our spice cabinet and pretend to, like, talk to the camera and put spices, like, mix spices in a bowl.
Oh, wow.
And pretend I was, like, talking to a fake audience and talking, you know. I like to talk to myself. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, talk. But I was pretending to be on camera, and it was something that I admired and wanted to do, which is kind of crazy when you think back about it. It's like, to see where I am now and that I'm starting to do those things, it's like, that's really kind of wild that as a little kid I was doing that.
Yeah.
Because it goes to show, like, that was planting the seeds for what I would end up doing at some point in my life. Now, I could have done
big
that
time.
And taken a different turn in my life and still can, but it's just kind of such, it's the irony to it. It's just really, it's really fun. So started very young, and I toyed with a few ideas when I was, I'll say I did the BOCES culinary program for
Fantastic.
2 years, and junior and senior, I went there half day. And I have to say, Chef Darcy Sala, she was great, a great instructor. She, culinary grad, she taught me a lot. I still remember a lot of the fundamental skills that I learned from the culinary BOCES program, the CTI program that I did. I mean, I remember, like, keeping your station clean and the cutting board needs to be close to the edge of the table and the knife cuts and the way you stand. Like, she really taught me a lot of the fundamental skills because she had, a few kids in her class. So she was able to focus on, certain people and, it wasn't like a class of 20, 30. It was, maybe like 10, 15. So she got to really hone in on certain people. And it was an awesome experience for me because, I was away from my home school, which was Spac and Kill. But I was really in my own world doing my own thing. And I, met some people and had, some friends from the BOCES program. But it really helped me. It was a really good thing for me to do. I think there's a stigma a lot of the times, when people go to, like, a tech school or, like, a BOCES. And I'm, like, here to break that stigma because it really pushed me forward. And I ended up graduating from that program from the 2 years as the valedictorian of the graduating BOCES class, which
Congrats,
was like
200 that's cool.
people. It was wild. And it was funny because I was away at a competition, Skills USA competition. And I was sad because I didn't win, blah, blah, blah. Or place. I didn't place. I was sad because I didn't place, whatever. And I was practicing a little bit with a couple of the chef instructors at BOCES prior to it. And I came back on the bus on the way home. I was feeling like, womp, womp. I got off the bus and the school principal, Mr. Schronen, I think his name was, came up to me and he wanted, and in that moment, it was weird. It's like I got off the bus and he took me and, walked with me outside or into the school. I can't remember. And he was like, want to let you know that you are going to be our valedictorian. I forget what exactly he said, but it was just like, forget the competition. This is pretty exciting.
There
I had
goes.
No idea. I had no idea that, I don't even know if I knew that was a thing. I mean, at high school level.
Yeah.
of course, there's a valedictorian, the salutatorian, but I don't think I realized that, like, the CTI programs anywhere did that sort of thing. And yeah. I wasn't thinking about it. You know, mm-hmm. I was just working hard and doing my thing. But it was this really, it was, that was a really important part of my senior year. And I had a hard senior year. I had gone through my first breakup, and that was really challenging. Yep. So that kind of, like, that helped shape me a little bit too. And then I had all these other fun opportunities. Ooh, I had all these other fun opportunities come through with that.
Yep.
And some awards that I got at the end of the year, like most improved in social studies.
I love that. Why I was asking most improved.
Most improved in Mr. D'Souza's class. Most improved in social studies. That was funny.
I love that.
So that started my journey. And a month after graduating from high school, about a month after graduating high school, I started at the culinary.
Oh, wow. A month after?
About a month after. I wanted to get right into it.
Oh, my God.
There's a ongoing enrollment throughout the year, and I started in June. And I was at the culinary for about a year doing like the fundamentals was like the first block or semester, you could say, where you learn all the like the five mother sauces, the basic knife cuts. You'd learn how to make consomme and mushroom cream of mushroom soup. And you learn how to go pick up the ordering, the class's grocery order. So there was a lot to come from learning, you know, that first semester. I mean, I did have a college experience. Yeah. I got a bachelor's degree from the culinary. But after the first year, I went on my externship, Castle Hill Inn, which is a Rolais Chateau.
Yes.
Are you familiar?
I'm familiar with it. Fantastic.
I lived in Newport for about 5-6 months. I was working as a line cook and on an all-girl line.
Really?
Which was really awesome.
That's awesome to see, too.
It was pretty awesome. It was a rough start, but then I started getting a lot more friendly with the girls, and I made friends from that experience. And it was very small. There was about 2 people on Garmanger, 1 person on Hot Ops, and then 1 person on the meat station, 1 on Entremet. I worked on Garmanger for about a couple weeks, but then they put me right on Hot Apps at Turn and Burn Station. That, like, I like almost my pants a couple times during service because it was challenging and restaurant work was not my thing.
Yeah.
I knew I needed to get the experience, but and then I went on to Entremet, which is all the sides, like the starchy sides, the veggie sides, and that was fun. That tucked me right into the kitchen. It was like an L-shaped line,
mm-hmm.
And very, very small. And then we had male chefs, male sous chef, male chef de cuisine, and an executive chef, but it was a great experience just living in Rhode Island. I lived at home and I was at the culinary, so I was like, I need to go away and do my thing.
Yeah.
And it was a really great experience. Like I want to go back to being that person. Like, it was just really fun to be able to live in this little beach town. I love Newport is like one of my favorite parts of the world. And I spent a lot of time by myself. I took myself out to eat a lot. I don't think I saved any money while I was living there, which is really crazy because current Frankie, people call me Frankie, Frankie is like, oh no, girl, you need to save your check. Or part of your check. But yeah, I just took that time as like, it was an experience for me. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot. I learned what my limits were. I learned a lot about being, you know, in the kitchen world. I learned a lot about myself and living alone. And it was a really, really fun. So I came back, finished the associate's program, and then I started bachelor's a couple months later, which was over the summer. And I was an applied food studies major, so it was only 3 semesters, but in one of the semesters was I got to go abroad and live in Italy for 3 months.
Oh,
Puglia.
My
I was
God.
Like, I can't, Italian girl. Can't.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it wasn't like a Rome or a Florence, a major city. We lived in a very quiet beach town.
Okay.
Off season.
Oh, more beach towns for you.
More beach towns for me. Although we didn't go towards the beach much at all because that was on the other, that was a different part of the town.
Okay.
But it was from like January, March to April.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold, quiet beach town in the heel of Puglia and Lecce. But we worked in the Castello di Ugento, which is this beautiful castle in the city of Lecce, I believe, or the city of Ugento, Lecce being probably the province of.
Gotcha.
And we got to go to, there was maybe about 20 kids, and we went to school there, and the state of the art equipment that we got to work with. And we went through the regions, and that's how you do probably with a lot of cuisine, culture, countries. Things are regionalized, but especially in Italy, they're very much regionalized, you probably know, by, you know, there's 20 regions in Italy. So we went through sections and parts of regions, and that was so awesome. And that's the way my brain, I break it down like, oh, cacio e pepe, that's Roman, that's lat from Lazio or Atrici. I mean, a lot of the best pastas, in my opinion, come from Lazio.
Interesting. Roma, so. Okay. Curious. Do you know where your family is out of from Italy?
I do. So my dad's side of the family, my grandparents are from northern Tuscany.
Okay.
So my grandmother's from a village called Gruppo di Loggia. And then my grandfather was from a village across from that called Versola. And
oh, you know the specifics.
I do.
Nice.
And I got to visit when I was studying abroad. I went during Easter, I went and visited my dad's cousins who I'd never met before. And
wow.
I spent a couple days with them up there. And it is literally up the mountain, like up the mountain. It's not a place you would, maybe a place you'd want to retire.
Okay.
You want it to be more sedentary or like work the land, and have a little farm and, you know, have a very quiet life. That's where you would want to live. But it's very remote.
It's cute though.
Very remote. It's cute. I mean, it's cute.
All I know is that my family was from Calabria. That's all I know.
I was going to ask if you had Italian roots.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom's side.
Your mom's side.
Mom's side of
Walsh
the family.
Walsh is definitely
not. Dad claims to be 100% Irish, whatever
that means. Have you been to Ireland, though?
No, I haven't. My parents have, but I haven't.
Okay.
I would love to. Actually, I've never been out of the country, so I need to get out of the country big time.
There.
No,
yeah.
Ireland and Italy.
Those are the top
two for me.
That's a popular combo, too.
Oh, it's a big. Oh, my God. And especially like going to Celtic festivals growing up. What is it? It's the Irish stubbornness and Italian anger. They would have shirts that say that.
This is so true.
Yep.
The Italian anger is real.
Yeah.
It's real.
it's true. And I got a mix of both within me.
Oh, boy.
Nope. So it's just kind of funny. And my girlfriend is supposedly all Italian as well.
Good luck.
So like you have that.
Good.
You know. Oh, I love her very much, but every once in a while it does come out. But like, oh my gosh, no, it's funny. But again, like, what is 100% these days? That's what I wonder. I don't understand that.
I don't know. We did the whole Ancestry.com thing, and there was a little bit of like Portuguese, I think, and French in mine.
See,
just
it makes
like,
sense.
A little,
like,
but it makes
portions.
Sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, no, like literally my last name, Walsh, means of Wales. I'm probably more Welsh than I am Irish.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yes, that checks. That checks.
Sorry, so I interrupted you there with your
this.
Whole, your time away when you were there with the culinary, the CIA. Yes, for people, for majority of the country, CIA is the government.
I
but
know,
for
I get
Hudson
about
Valley,
that all the time.
Hudson Valley culinary is the CIA.
Right, Hudson Valley. It's the Culinary Institute of America.
Yep.
It's different. I do work for the CIA. No, just kidding. I mean,
you see,
can you imagine?
It's funny because I've seen so many hoodies, especially like people wear CIA hoodies, just says CIA, and they'd be like, oh, like the government? It's like, no,
no.
The culinary.
I chop chicken for a living.
There you go. It's like, where's the meal? Get stuff like that. Oh, that's a cringy joke. But
it's all good. I'm cringe.
But that's fantastic that you had these experiences. And it was really, so it sounds like during this time at the CIA, this was like the real time for you to kind of discover who you are on your own, kind of getting outside of just what home is and kind of rediscovering yourself and discovering so many things around you.
I did so much when I was in those years. I'll say even before I went to Italy, in high school and a little bit into college, I worked at La Delizio as a pastry shop.
Nice.
So that was my first real job,
my
first real bakery job or food industry job. I was maybe 16 years old.
Gotcha.
Once I got my working papers.
There you go.
Are those even a thing anyway?
They probably are, but
oh
my God.
Once I got my working papers, I was like, I really want to work. And so I worked as a bakery clerk, filling cannolis, filling cookies in the case, all the things. And at some point I asked to go in the back and I started to learn some things. And one of the things that I always struggled making when I was there was the rainbow layer cookies.
Oh.
That's a hard thing to make, especially on a larger scale.
Interesting.
Because of the, you know, mixing the paste into the, I haven't made them in so long, but I think it's like an egg white. It's like a fluffier egg white mixture, aerated mixture. And you're mixing like the almond paste into it, which is a heavier, stickier substance. And, and so you can end up with clumps. And then you're coloring three batches and you have to make sure each layer on each sheet tray is like smooth. I remember just standing there with my spatula, just going back and forth so many times on the tray to make sure it was nice and smooth. It was a thing. But I learned so much and typing. I learned a lot of
typing skills.
I do
bake.
For you.
There you go. I'll hit you up the next time I need something. I'll cook,
no,
but I don't bake.
No.
Anytime I've baked anything, I think I've ruined the majority of it. So
you know what? Cooking, I did culinary arts program instead of the pastry program because I wanted a more versatile skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the pastry, you really have to be dedicated to the pastry.
Oh my God. People who point, do though. It can do it amazingly. I and give so not, much credit.
Oh, yeah. I'm not artistic like that. So I didn't want to go. I mean, I can be, but I didn't want to be. I was like, this is not, I want a different skill set that I could, you know, grow into.
Mm-hmm.
Like La Deliziosa. Frank, shout out to Frank and Maria who own and run La Deliziosa. They're incredible. Their skills are incredible. They could stand there like decorating cakes all day long, and they have skills that I could not. And I'm okay with that. Like,
yep.
There are people that are meant to do that thing. I love I love piping though, and filling and making pretty little designs, not like intricate designs, but just like your classic little rosettes.
There
and I
go.
Learned a lot of my piping skills there because I did it a lot. I got to fill, you know, I got to fill eclairs and the cream puffs, and I'm trying to think what else. Maybe I did Napoleon's once. I can't remember. But there were things that I got to do to help fill the pastry case while working in the back.
Nice.
But yeah, that was great. Giacomo's came at some point in there. I worked at Lola's.
Oh, really?
Did catering a little bit. I
did
was
ya?
Like a prep catering for them on like offsite events. And then I worked at Crave. I think that was the summer before my bachelor's program. I worked at Crave before it was Lolita's. And I worked in the kitchen as garmanger, and I did desserts, and
nice.
I did a little bit like some of their like savory salads, and there might have been a cheese plate or something, but I got that experience. And right after that point, and I think that was over the that was the summer of 2017, I believe. And before that, I mean, that was the summer of 2017. And so going into my bachelor program, I started to work. I actually got a little gig, which I think was the end of the time that I worked at Crave. I got a gig working for a Patti LaBelle. It was Patti. I think it was called Patti's Place was her show for
oh,
the Cooking
cool.
Channel.
Nice.
And I knew a food stylist who did some work with the culinary, who asked me to assist her on this production. It was 3 weeks. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks in New Jersey with a production company, Powerhouse Productions, which
Amazing.
Is long story short, I ended up working for Powerhouse Productions for almost 4 years. And that was the first time I met them. And they were working on this series called Patti's Place. And I hustled and did the thing and really got like my feet. Never hurt as bad as they did.
Oh, God.
Oh my gosh. My feet were in so much pain. We were in a tent outside.
Oof.
It was like a rent, like people rent their houses out for, as you know, people rent their houses out for productions. And so we were in a tent, a makeshift kitchen in the driveway. And there was, you know, a sink with probably cold running water and like dirty dishes. And
oh God.
There was a stove over here and a fridge over here. And the props were all set up in the garage. And I was running in and out of the house where the set was. And I was probably wearing Crocs.
Oh gosh.
And
those aren't supportive.
They're not. My feet hurt so bad.
Oof.
I had to go into the bathroom and sit on the floor a couple times because my feet were in so much pain. It was
Ouch.
Wild. And one of my good friends let me stay at her house in New Jersey for I forget if it was a week or two. It was nice though. She let Shawnee let me do that. That was and we both worked on it together, and that was a really fun experience. Really great way to make the connections to Powerhouse.
Absolutely.
And so that was my first, I think, real like food media television experience.
You're kind of living out the dream of that little Frankie who is doing
little
all the
Frankie.
Stuff with all the spices,
yes.
pretending to speak to an audience.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. Working on the back end of it and seeing like these celebrities come through, Patti LaBelle, Miss Patti.
Yeah.
So that was great. And then after that ended, I got a job working with cookbook author, I want to say this right because she has so many amazing things, cookbook author, food stylist, I think in the past, and she used to be the food director for Real Simple, Sarah Copeland.
Oh, okay.
I think she's written 4 cookbooks, and I worked on her 3rd cookbook with her every day of Saturday. I was like an intern.
Oh, wow.
I was her intern every Monday. I didn't have class on Mondays in the fall, so I would go and work with her every Monday. I would like help her with her expenses. I would test recipes. There were a couple shoots for her book that I got to assist on.
Nice.
And she lives up in the Kingston area, and she works out of her home, and it was just this beautiful. It's like a little cottage life almost. And it's this beautiful experience. I got close with her family, with her. She's somebody I look up to. She's really, truly somebody I look up to. And ever since I met her and got to work with her, I'm like, I want to be this woman. I want to have this life. I want to be this woman.
Yeah.
She's amazing. And that was another great food media experience that just through somebody that I knew from the culinary, they were like, oh, this person's looking to hire an intern. It was like on a Facebook page or something. She saw it.
Yeah.
I jumped on it, interviewed. It was, again, one of those things where you feel like this was meant to be.
Yeah.
Like this was meant to be. Like I can't imagine not having had that experience. It makes so much sense.
Mm.
So I did that up until the time I went to Italy. And then Italy happened and I came back and I was in the city for about 6 months. I was in and out of the city for about 6 months freelancing. I did a little bit of private chef work in the city. I did a little bit of food styling assistant. I got to assist some pretty renowned food stylists, which was really fabulous experience all over the city. A little bit of private chefing, and I was interviewing for some other like full-time gigs. I almost took a job in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, wow.
At like the Meredith. Change. Yeah, very much. At the Meredith head. It was Time Inc. And I think now it's Meredith.dash.
Okay.
They do like their Serious Eats, Food and Wine, all recipes. Pretty sure they're all encompassing of those brands and their test kitchens are down there.
Oh, there you go.
So I almost, it was like a backfill food styling or food styling assistant position. I almost got it. I almost took it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was offered it. I almost took it. But then when I was actually working with Sarah again on a very short-term project and I was sitting in the Hannaford parking lot. I was going shopping for her for a shoot or for something we were doing. And I got a phone call, random phone call from these two women. They were probably on like different, like it was like a three-way call from Rochelle Brown and Sonia Armstead, who were the producers and executive producers and founders of Powerhouse Productions. They called me and they said, we have a lot of opportunities coming up with our company and we really want to hire and bring in a producer or, you know, associate producer, culinary producer. And we think you would be a good person for that. And it was just like, wow. That's crazy.
Especially like what? That's the only wild experience that you had with them was three-week period?
A year ago. Yeah, the year prior.
Yeah.
And I had
that's pretty
I
insane.
I stayed in touch with them a little bit throughout the year. I would call them. I would leave messages. When I was in Italy, I tried calling them because I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm graduating as soon as I get back and I need to line something up. I need to figure this out. Didn't hear from them. And then months later, that happened. It was really whimsical. Another point of this really feels like this is meant to be.
Yeah.
So that happened. I started with them in September of 2018, full time. For almost 4 years, I was there, and they sent me to Birmingham, Alabama.
So you still end up there anyway.
First week of working for them on a project with Chef JJ Johnson, and then I went to California and worked on a show. So, I mean, there were all these projects. I helped by being a powerhouse. They were closely with TV One and Cleo TV, which is their sister network, a network for millennial women of color. A lot of the content is about and for that demographic. And I got to work on multiple shows that were launching in 2019. And so that's why they were like, we need to bring somebody on to help us like coordinate a lot of the culinary aspects of this, even though I had not a lot of experience in media or production at that time and fresh out of culinary school, but I learned quick on my feet and they took me under their wing. And I mean, I did everything from probably helping book flights and create like make call sheets to doing some culinary breakdowns, which, you know, the first of which I learned. Now that process has evolved so much for me as I've worked at Delish. Like culinary breakdowns look so much different to me now. You know, it's different everywhere.
Yeah.
I traveled a lot. I've gone to St. Thomas, Ghana, Puerto Rico. We were in LA a lot, out in California, Philly. Like I went all over. I mean, when I tell you it was a real stepping stone,
Really did a lot. Sent you everywhere.
It sent me everywhere.
Wow.
A very small, quaint team. I did a lot. I saw a lot. I experienced a lot. And honestly, I feel like after working there, I'm like, there's nothing I can't.
I can do anything at this point. Honestly,
in the most humble way.
Yeah.
Saying that with the most humility, there's nothing I can't do because it challenged me in many ways. I worked in some, you know, I worked on a travel show with them. I worked on a design show that had a cooking element. I worked on multiple cooking shows with Chef JJ, Gernard Wells, Brent Herrera, Essie Bartels, and then Jake and Jeff Smollett, the design show with the cooking element. And Elton Anderson and Ty Buchamp was the travel show that happened before COVID. So I think that kind of got cut. But I got to do a lot of those things. And then some random like TV segments here. I worked on a cookbook. I have my name in a cookbook, which is awesome.
Nice.
Like it's just wild to think that It was truly such a major part of my upbringing.
Yeah, part of your journey.
Really major part of my journey.
Yeah.
But I did so much and saw so much that it's like, I feel like there's nothing I can't do. On the design show, I always think about this, though. On the design show that we worked on, I did maybe 3 seasons with them. And there's like 12 to 16 episodes per season. I can't quite remember, but I would go into, you're redesigning somebody's living room or bedroom or whatever it is. And there was a cooking element. Jake and Jazz both, she baked, she did sweet and, pastry baking, and he cooked the meal. Because it's like a meal and a reveal, which is like the smartest tagline that the team came up with, that Rochelle came up with, Rochelle and Sonny came up with. It's just the smartest tagline, but a meal and a reveal. So they would design the space, and then they would both cook on the show, like a meal for the couple or the person they were designing for. Mm-hmm. And there was a season or two where we would actually cook out of the kitchens of the person's home. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that I saw were not great. And just the fact that I had to load up my little rental van with my bins and the food and bring it all and like lug it upstairs or lug it and clean out stoves. I mean, there were just things that I'm like,
I'm sure a food inspector would not
approve.
Yeah.
No, I don't know how I got away with that.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It's different. When it is somebody's home versus like a kitchen of a restaurant or something.
No.
Those are totally different standards. Yeah. Especially like if these are like not real sets. These are truly homes.
These are truly homes.
Yeah, you're going to see
people,
a lot.
Clean your house before, clean your kitchen before, but it's fine. It's people's home. They're comfortable with what they're comfortable with. But that's just all to say, like, some of the things that I got to experience and see, is interesting. And then just even like somebody once said that TV production is like catering on steroids, or culinary TV production is like catering on steroids because of the load in and the load out, like all the props you have to load in, all the food you have to load in. I mean, you're shooting 10, 15, 20 episodes in a week's time. You've been in the TV film world, and it's a lot. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Most of the time it's true. Like when you see a lot of things that are filming something, a lot of the times you're right. It is within a very short period of time. It's like, you're going from one to the next, It's like when you see somebody,
2-3 episodes a day.
Yeah. Easily, where you're working on something, you change clothes to make it seem like it's a different thing.
Oh yeah.
I've done like 7 of these in one day. Yay.
Yeah.
No. And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Adversity and stress. How do you cope? I'm dealing with a voice issue right now, my own adversity and stress. So let's use AI Andy for the rest of this message. Take it away, AI Andy.
This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at MHA of Dutchess County. We all move on a scale of mental wellness. It can shift minute by minute, hour by hour, based on what we face. What happens when it piles on? How do you cope? Do you turn to the bottle or vape? Do you medicate with pills not prescribed for that purpose? Do you become short-tempered and argue with others? Are you quick to road rage? These are self-defeating and negative reactions, and they're unhealthy and can lead to self-inflicted further stress. There's no shame in seeking to improve you by engaging in self-care with a therapist. If you do not know where to start, talk to your primary care physician. You can always contact Mental Health America of Dutchess County at 845-473-2500, and if we don't have a specific program to help you, we will help guide you to one.
Thanks, AI Andy. You sound pretty good.
Thanks, Andrew and AI Andy. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
message from the College and Career Supply Registry from KIPP Capital Region. Help them provide essential supplies to their graduating seniors and make a positive impact on the beginning of their journey after KIPP. You can scan the QR codes on screen or visit the links in the description of this episode. Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit prwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show and play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, KIPP Capital Region, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
But, you know, it's true. It really does. It's a crazy thing. And then also you have food, which probably not a term that you would necessarily think when it comes to food, but it's very volatile. It's like you have to worry about, like, all the food, the condition of it, how it's going to go, and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, is it presentable? Is it edible? Is it like, will it last in these conditions? You have to worry about those things. And then also something that I learned through friends of mine who went to the culinary, some of the stuff for TV isn't edible and it's not made to be edible. It's made to look good for the camera.
For the camera.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's also a very, probably more or less a common misconception too. In my experience, all the food that I've ever had to deal with on for television or at Delish is always edible.
Oh, fantastic.
We don't use like tire shining oil or I don't even know because I've
they
never
do some crazy stuff
they do
sometimes.
Some crazy stuff. I don't know because I've never had to actually do it. I think the craziest thing that I'm thinking, what is the craziest thing that I've ever had to do? Actually, when I first that first week that I started at Powerhouse when I was out in LA working on a show. I remember we didn't have enough mac and cheese to fill a 9x13 pan. So we stuffed paper towel under it and we put the mac and cheese on top. I do remember that. Sorry. Sorry, Rochelle. Don't get mad. But I mean, there's just little tricks sometimes that you have to not. I mean, that's still not unedible.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah. No, that's fine. And to be honest, in my opinion, there is never enough mac and cheese.
There's never enough. Never enough. Never, never, never.
Yeah.
So there are things. I mean, a lot of my experience, I will say I haven't had to deal with like the fakey fakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you use like cosmetic like sponges for like wedges or putty to stick something onto the surface. Or okay. I mean, you might have to add more food. A lot of times at Delish, we use a lot of food dye. Well, shouldn't probably say that out loud, but we do. We use a lot of food dye on set to like really pump up the color, the contrast, you know, so that the post work maybe isn't as difficult because you want something to be really red or really yellow and it just doesn't come through visually when you're shooting it. It's not astronomical. I will say we had a styling class a couple months ago. We had Adrienne Anderson, who's an amazing prop and food stylist out of New York. She's out west now, but she's incredible. And she's helped do a lot for us at Delish. And she came in and did a couple food styling classes with us.
Oh,
and
cool.
She taught us to take baby diapers. You soak it in whatever liquid that you're going to need ice. Like if you're,
okay.
I mean, like if you're making a slushy drink, right? So say you're making like an Aperol slushy and you want it to live on set for an hour without melting. You soak a baby diaper in this like orangey, this like sunset orange liquid until it's saturated and you tear open the diaper and you take out that like, there's this material inside it that's like jelly.
Yeah,
and
all the absorbent and slushy material. Wow.
And that's a hack. You don't drink that. I don't know if we
please done. Not.
You don't drink that. And maybe we've, I haven't done it, but somebody at work may have for a photo shoot. I'm not usually on the photo side of things, but So that's a hack.
Mm,
fake
that's
ice.
Fun.
We use fake ice a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fake ice, You're not gonna. But yeah, we don't play with our food too much.
No, that's keep awesome it, though. We keep it authentic.
We keep it authentic. We keep it real.
Yes.
And then the vultures come. I'm just kidding. People do love to eat.
Oh,
when
I'm
we
sure.
Put it out, we have a I'm channel sure. and we say food on blah 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 floor and people.
Well, we were the same way over at Town Square since a lot of the morning shows would bring in a lot of local restaurants. And I also find it hilarious to be having people bring in food to a radio station where nobody can even see any of this stuff.
Yeah,
you're just like funny. Hearing about it. I think it's hilarious.
That is funny.
But it was the best thing for us because they would come in with trays of food and be like, oh, I don't have to order lunch today.
Perfect.
And we got a mix of just about everything. We had tons of German food, Italian Ooh. Food. We got ourselves, you know, there'd be a bunch of different pizzerias or barbecue places.
And this was every day.
Not every day, but you could at least once a week, if not more.
That's nice. That's a nice thing to look forward to.
It was nice.
And that boosts morale big time.
It does. And then we also had a couple of trade deals with a couple of businesses that would advertise through us. Part of the trade deal was, like, say, certain times a week, like, every Tuesday was Pizza Tuesday. So we would get specialty pizzas from Touch of Naples or Mike and Joe's. And Mondays would be Bagel Mondays. So Moonrise Bagels, we'd get all the stuff
bagels.
So we'd have things like that. So it was like, oh, this is nice. It's like, but yeah, you're right. As soon as that email or message or whatever, people are like flocking to the kitchen.
Flock.
And it's eaten immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Except for the salad. The salad lasted a couple days.
Oh, yeah.
But no, that's fantastic. So that's a lot of the work with Powerhouse, and Powerhouse sounds fantastic. Could probably spend like a whole day talking about everything. But let's talk about where you're currently at with Delish. You are the food editor over there. So how did your time with Powerhouse influence getting the Delish job and the things that you do with Delish?
So during my, you know, after COVID, you know, I was ready for some change and I wanted to work in the digital media space. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, my network of amazing women helped me get me to where I needed to be and mentoring me along the way and pushing me in directions that I'm somebody that needs to like talk to 10, 20 people before I make a decision, which is like, come on, girl, be a woman, figure it out yourself. But I'm somebody that needs to like rally my community and be like, am I making the right decision? Is this right for me? Do I need to do this? Blah, blah, blah.
It's great that you have a community like that to even speak with.
I'm very, very grateful. Yeah. I'm very, very grateful. And not to be, you know, not to be sappy about it, but truly very, very grateful to have such a great community of women, people, not just women, but a lot of just people in my life that support me and have always supported me and that are just good to me. So
that's awesome.
Thank you. But it was interesting, my getting to Delish. Mm-hmm. I applied for two positions, one of which I didn't want, but I was like, I got to get my foot in the door somehow. You know, breaking into media in general is very difficult. Food media is very difficult and the jobs are very far and few between. So if I want to do this, you know, it didn't feel right. You know, when something doesn't feel right, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is this right? Should I do it? Maybe I could just stay here and then see if something else comes along, whatever. But I was offered, I applied for two positions. I was rejected twice. Mm. And then I was offered both of those positions. The one that I didn't want. It's funny enough, a girl I went to the culinary with ended up taking the one job I didn't want, which was on the food team, on our food team, but it was more of a food production position, more of a writing position, which I want to be all hands-on, styling on camera, recipe development. I wanted hands-on. I wanted to be more in the recipe developing world, in the kitchen, as opposed to more writing. So she was offered this position over me, and then I found out that she ended up taking another job. So I was offered the position. But I didn't know it was this girl until I started at Delish and I saw her name tag.
Oh, really?
On one of the cubicles. And I'm like, no way. This is wild. So I actually thanked her one day and I said, thank you for doing what you did. I know, you know, you got the job, you took another job, but that helped me get where I am. Like, it's just crazy. Things are crazy sometimes.
Yep.
So I was offered the job. I was going to sign the contract, all the things. And then I got a phone call because I had interviewed with my current boss, Rob Seixas, who's fantastic. And I had been like messaging him. I was, you know, we were emailing back and forth for a while over a couple months during like the interview process, and he knew what I really wanted. Mm-hmm. But this was a job that was available more so for me. It was like a food production assistant position. And so he, and they were hiring for a assistant food editor, but I didn't end up getting it. Mm-hmm. I didn't end up getting either. Then I got the one because the other girl took another job. And then I got a phone call after I was like all set up to take that other job. I don't know. It was probably a couple weeks before I was supposed to start. And I got a phone call from HR saying that I was being offered another assistant food editor position because more senior person on the team was leaving. Mm. So it opened up another position.
There you go.
And I was like, wow. That was probably one of the best days of my life.
Wow.
It really was, because it was what I wanted. It was everything. I was like, I am qualified for this job. This is exactly what I want to be doing right now. Recipe developing. A lot of things, you know, a lot of like social forward content, working like assisting, you know, food styling, assisting mm-hmm. on video and photo. I mean, it was all the things. So that was a whirlwind. I always describe it as a whirlwind because it was. Why wouldn't it be? So I started in June 3 years ago, and it's taken itself on a journey.
Wow. That is something. 3 years. Congratulations on almost getting to the 3 years, of course. So now let's kind of get into the nitty gritty of it. Like, when people look up Delish, look up the things that you've worked on, what can people find and what are some of the projects that you've been most proud of with your time there at Delish?
So at Delish, there are 4 food editors on the team, and we're kind of all distinguished in our own little way. You know, we all have our own style. Each of us brings a different expertise to the table, and it's really good for Google and SEO and all the things. I mean, I'm learning so much about SEO and Google. I mean, I wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for Google, let's be honest. But just through working for Delish, I've learned all of these things. And a lot of these media brands want to put their food team as like the forefront of the brand because it's interesting. There's personalities to for the audience to connect with. You know, we're the creators, the artist, and we're making the food that creates the content. So there's 2 food editors. There's myself, Taylor Ann Spencer's the other food editor, who's fantastic. She's the brains. She's like our brainy, like sciencey gal. There's Brooke, who's also incredible and fantastic, smart, witty, funny. She has an engineering background, which is amazing. Oh, cool. And then there's our senior food editor, Mackenzie, who's lovely and wonderful. And she's been with Delish for a long time. And so we all have our own little expertise. Mine is in the Mediterranean, Italian
world.
I wonder why. Come on. Come on now. But mine is – they gave us like buckets. Mm-hmm. And we stay within the perimeter of those. We stay within the bucket, but then we jump out sometimes.
Yeah.
But a lot of my work is – I'll just say – I'm very heavily involved in video. I don't do – the 3 of them do our focus. They do video and photo. They style video and photo, but I produce and style video.
Nice.
And I started doing that with our – you know, I saw that there was a need to have a video producer working on our social content. I was – a couple years ago, I was asked to style our video content for social with a producer at the time that was working with us. And then after she left, there was a growing need for a full-time producer, somebody to be more involved in the weeds of social production, because on-site video was its own thing and social video was its own thing. Yeah. And now it's kind of meshed together and we have a different system. But I pitched myself to be this producer for our social content. And so I went out, you know, I went off the photo track, and I was like, I have a video background, I have a production background. Mom and I just kind of take on, not a full-time producer job, but I want, you know, hybrid, you know, I want to do a little bit of producing. I want to produce. We can bring in another stylist or work with stylists on our team to do the styling for video, work with a DP, and then I'm the one producing and, you know, helping create the vision.
Yeah.
Doing all the pre and post work, whatever. And that was, you know, 1 to 2 days a week. And then also still be able to style video. Because I don't want to, you know, styling is a very important skill to have. And I don't want to lose that. So, you know, I still want to be able to, I want to be able to produce. But I also want to be able to style too once in a while, a couple times a month at least. So there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of changes throughout the last couple of years of things. But where we are now is I'm in a position where, as a food editor, I'm producing and styling a couple times a month. And I'm developing recipes, like maybe 4 to 6 recipes a month. I'm writing features and I do on-camera hosting. We have these edutainments that we, our social team has a a producer that produces edutainments once a week with each of the four food editors. And then we have cocktail experts, Cody and Camille Goldstein, who come in and do cocktail content.
I like
that. They're wonderful. And I get to work with them. They produce social content, like Hands and Pans style social content that I produce with them. And then our other producer for edutainments works with them. And the edutainments, they're educational and they're entertaining, which is also whoever came up with that. It was very smart.
Great term.
It's a great term. I can only guess who, but it's a very, very smart way to put it, because we are literally educating and entertaining.
Yeah.
And each of the food editors has their buckets. So I do a lot of taste tests, like tomato sauce taste tests or jarred, like I'm trying the best pestos, tomato sauce, tomato, feta, blah, blah, blah. I do a lot of taste tests. I also do other things like cooler hacks or how to take care of indoor plants or like indoor herbs, how to tell when your pasta is al dente. I go into like the nitty gritty of things like the DOP, the IGP, like what those products mean.
Yeah.
Like what is a real feta? What is a real Parmigiano cheese? What is al dente? Like I go into some of the nitty gritty, but I also skim the surface of some topics. I don't get too deep. I'm not the science-y person, but
lead a lot of people into those conversations.
I help lead people into those conversations. To cut it short, I am big on product. I love products. I love specific products like types of canned tomatoes or feta or Parmigiano, like types of cheeses, types of like tomato sauces or sauces in general. I did a rotisserie chicken taste test.
Nice.
So I do a lot of taste tests. I talk to people. I tell people a lot about like we scale in on a certain ingredient to talk about like what to look for, what it like is made of, why it's the right thing, olive oil, feta, Parmigiano, that sort of thing. So it's Mediterranean Italian, but it's also not. And that's kind of my bucket for edutainment. And then we also do guided, which I've produced one of. But we have a couple producers that we work with that we bring in, culinary producers. And these guided videos they're not full-on hosted videos.
Okay.
Which I've also done in the past and I've produced. But they are like what you see on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. People are like standing in front of the camera, like making something and like giving a little bit of background about why they're making it, why it's special. We're not talking you through how to do it.
Yeah.
We're
very edited and then voiceover.
Very edited and voiceover. And on camera, it's a different setup in our kitchen. We're on camera. We're doing the thing. We're at the stove. We're at the counter. We're eating it. We're talking about it. It's like, oh my gosh, I hate cheesecake, but I'm making these cheesecake bars and they're the best things I ever had. You know, it's just kind of the whole shtick with the guided. So we have different buckets of video and it's all been so fun. I mean, honestly, it's really so much different experience. It's hard work.
Yeah.
It's hard work and it's fun. And I think, you know, people think it's a glamorous thing and it's not glamorous. It's hard. Being on camera is a lot of work. It's exhausting.
I hate being on camera. I wish I could go back to the days of just simply in the radio station. Like, I got to worry about, like, kind of what I look like.
You
got to
worry
right
about
now.
What you look like. Yeah. I have raccoon eyes. I'm doing my makeup. I'm doing my hair. My hair's flying around. A recent video of me, I did a feta video, a guided marinated feta video. And I was looking at the edit yesterday, actually, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, who let me look like that? My makeup looked terrible. Oh, I looked terrible.
I know. I look back at Walsh Wednesdays and I'm like, oh God, can we replace the host, please?
Yeah.
Like, I just like put in a stand in or something. We'll dub him in post, please.
Yes.
God. And thank God for hats. Thank God for Walsh Wednesday hats. You can get it at the Walsh Wednesday merch store. But, you have no idea right now, but I have 5 layers of makeup and 3 plastic surgeries right now just to look like
right.
this. And that says something. No, I'm kidding, of course. But yeah, no, it's true. There is a certain level to it. And of course, like so much of being on camera, being online, producing content, so much of it is curated, trying to put best foot forward. It can be very tough. And it's not a very glamorous thing. It's funny because when you have like the final product of something, it's like, oh wow, this looks so good, but it takes out all the stuff that's been edited out, all the in between, all the setup, you know. Even like take Walsh Wednesday, you see the blue curtains right now, you don't see the rest of my family room, and you won't, but
<It's cute. laughs>
but you know, it's just the way that the industry works in that regard.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, talking about the kind of content that you are producing, for anybody who's out there who's listening to it, it's like, oh, I want to check this out, where can people go to
find, watch, listen, and see the stuff that you are writing, producing, etc.?
Yes. On Delish.com, I have a page, Delish.com. I have a friend, under Francesca Zani, I have all the recipes I've developed, articles I've written. I'm on Instagram and TikTok, and I do a lot of collab posts with Delish too, which is really awesome.
Nice.
And so that content lands on my Francesca Di Zani Instagram and TikTok pages as well.
Fantastic.
And then in addition to my Delish content, the Garnish Palette, which is a brand that I've had since I was in culinary school, and I had a blog when I was in Italy. That was part of our routine work every day was a blog post, creating a blog and doing a blog post.
Really?
And I had that blog before I went, but it wasn't anything special at all. And it's not now. But it was really tiny, starting out, again, a playground for me to style food and to cook and to do things and to like play with a camera. And when I grew it, it got a lot more interesting when I was in Italy and I was sharing tidbits about every day being there. And then I've wanted to grow it more into a business. And when I was at Powerhouse Productions, they helped me open an LLC.
Wow.
So it's Garnish Pal LLC. So now I have a business and I've had that for 4 or 5 years now. And I've kind of flexed my entrepreneurial muscle a little bit to feel what that's like. So I did an Apple Crisp sale 2 Thanksgivings ago. And last year in 2024, I started these Francesca's Chow Boxes. So it has my espresso chocolate chunk blondies, St. Augustus mocktail, Sfollini pasta, Italian Avera tomato, which is an Italian product, and a collaborated locally handmade piece of pottery from Silica Pottery Studio in Beacon.
Oh, awesome.
So like create this little pasta experience, because every Sunday night on my Instagram stories, I do Sunday night pasta programming. And it's something I just did once or twice, and then I fell into it, and I'm like, I'm gonna keep doing this. And some people will bring it up to me, and I'm like, I think I should keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then I turned it into the theme of the box. The boxes have been very hard, you know. That's I've learned so much doing the research and ordering and putting these boxes together and marketing them. I mean, I did a little photo shoot outside, a little photo and video shoot outside of my house, outside in the bright sunlight to get that gorgeous, bright, vibrant, shadowy light that I wanted to have. I wanted the aesthetic to be that. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that went into creating this product was very much an important part of my learning experience of what it's like to own a business. I mean, a very small scale business, but to even just to bite into what that's like, it was so important to me. So if I don't even, you know, if I will sell them all at some point.
Yeah.
And move on and maybe continue to do more of them or move on to something else. But the most important thing that I keep telling myself is that you learn so much doing that. Like, I mean, of course, everything's a learning experience. But some people might not want it to be that. You get frustrated and you're like, I don't care. Like, at first I was like, I don't really care. It's a learning experience. What and that? I want to make money doing this. I want this to be something. I want it to take off.
Yep.
But I'm at the point where I'm like, no, that's not what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a slow growing process. It's lots of growing pains. You have to learn a lot to get to the next thing. And to wherever that might be. And at some point I might want to open a brick and mortar of some sort, or really grow an online business, e-commerce. Whatever that is, but I've learned a lot doing it. But the latest and greatest of it is I did some in-person PR at a couple places in the last couple of weeks, and Stella's Fine Market and Beacon
fantastic.
took a liking to the boxes, and they were like, let's try and experiment and see if we could sell these during Father's Day week. And that's exciting.
That was really exciting. Yeah.
That's kind of the market I would want to be in.
Great support, great local support. Absolutely.
Nikki's the owner. She's really awesome. I mean, I didn't know her before. I walked in, I introduced myself, a cold intro, and she really, really awesome. Like, we connected right away and it was really awesome. I think she had done that sort of thing in the past, and so she probably understood, like,
she saw herself in what you were doing.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really cool.
It was great.
Now, Frankie, as we're wrapping up this episode, I've been loving hearing everything that you've gone through. What an incredible journey.
My journey.
For sure. And so one thing's for sure that I keep thinking as you're talking about all of this, I'm just thinking about that little Frankie there in the kitchen playing
little
with everything.
Frankie.
How does that feel now to be accomplishing so many of those dreams and so many of those fun activities of you playing pretend back then, to be in front of the camera, be producing content, pre-production, production, cooking, developing recipes, all of this is like, you know, how could little Frankie anticipate all the things that you've done today? How do you feel looking back at that version of you to where you are now?
Little Frankie. Little Frankie would probably be so happy and excited to know that I'm doing what I've always wanted to do. I mean, and more or less, again, it feels like it's a story of so many people and it's like a cliche or whatever you want to call it. But it's like to say that it's something that I literally my entire life have wanted to do, this sort of thing, since I was that little Frankie, it's incredible to be on this journey and to continue growing in different directions with it. Yeah. And realizing, like, when I was younger, I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to do whatever that meant to me at the time. That's not what I want. I don't want to be a chef. I don't want to work in a restaurant. It's not me. To see where the trajectory has taken me, I've gone directions that I probably didn't think I would. Like, I always said I would never want to start a business. I would never want to have a business. Blah, 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 blah. Well, and here I am, kind of doing the thing in a different way. And it ties into food media. And food media landscape is a place that I've always wanted to be, probably since I was later in high school, earlier in college, like figuring that out. And even when I was in college, I created like a digital food media magazine as like a little side project because I knew like I wasn't in a program that allowed me to do those things. So I kind of had to create the activities for it. But there are some things coming out of this experience, this life experience, that I probably would not have thought I would do at all. I mean, and that's just the mystery of it all. And there are things that I'm going to do that I'm probably like, wow, I never expected that to happen, or I never thought that was going to happen, or I never thought I'd want to do that. Again, I keep going back to the business. I really never thought that I would want to have a business, but I keep thinking that's like the next step for me at some point.
Yeah.
It's going to be my baby.
There you go. And then you're going to have your own like conglomerate and running everything. And you never know where it's going to take you.
You never know.
Honestly, out of the last several years, you've worn so many hats, gone to so many different places. Who knows what's next at this point?
Yeah.
So, of course, you can check out all of Frankie's links, whether it comes from Delish, whether it comes from the Garnish Palette, or it's her own personal social media. You can find that in the description of this episode. We'll make sure that you can find everything all together, try out the different recipes and all the different recommendations. I know I'm going to get into it a lot more, so I'm excited. Frankie, again,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Get those star ratings. Get those star ratings.
Absolutely. Again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
So much fun.
I'm Connor.
I'm Frankie.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, KIPP Capital Region, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and SAPE LLP, Attorneys at Law, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.